All right, let us begin to commence to start. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
And welcome. My name is Michael Pellet, and I'm pastor at King of Glory Lutheran Church in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. And I also teach in the philosophy department at the University of Saskatchewan. But more importantly, this week we have been looking at parables. And the theme, the summer theme for Holden is the many-colored grace of God. And of course, I'm sure as most of you know, parables are trying to tell us something about grace. The kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven, the reign and rule of God, or perhaps one might want to say the way God goes about doing things, the parables tell us is a gracious way and try to help us understand something about grace. And yet, the five parables that I've chosen for this week to have us look at, and this is my overall umbrella theme, end up with someone or a group of people being unforgiven. And so we have parables here of the unforgiven. And so how is it that if the way God does things is gracious, we end up with people in parables being unforgiven, because that doesn't sound very gracious, does it? And so that's what we're trying to look at and work our way through this week to understand the dynamics, if you will, of God's gracious ways. And today we'll be looking at the parable of the laborers in the vineyard, Matthew 20, verses 1 to 15. And it seems what we have going on there, I've entitled this wage rage, because that seems to be the problem. And also behind me again, a little chart, a little graph here, simply again trying to outline the action or the movement in the parable to help us think our way through each one of these little scenes or episodes, right? A little something different happens. And so if you want to follow the story, to think your way through, you can break it down this way to say, okay, now what's going on here and how does it develop? And again, we're not going to follow this absolutely and closely, but it's just I hope a helpful device to enable you to one way to track your way through the parable. And so we'll begin by looking at the parable, chapter 20 of Matthew, verses 1 to 15. Please follow along, and I will read for you the way I translate this parable, and then we'll start thinking about it. So, Matthew chapter 20, beginning at verse 1. Similarly, therefore, is the kingdom of the heavens to a man, to the head of the household and landowner, who came out first thing in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. Having come to a mutual agreement with the workers of $40 for the day, he sent them out into his vineyard. And going out about 9 o'clock, he saw others standing around in the marketplace, doing nothing. And he said to those, "You also go down into the vineyard, and whatever might be considered a just payment, I will give to you." And they went out. And again, going out about noon and 3 o'clock, he did the same. And about 5 o'clock, going out, he found others standing around. And he says to them, "Why are you standing around here the whole day doing nothing?" They said to him, "Because no one has hired us." He says to them, "Go down, even you, into the vineyard." And becoming evening, the master of the vineyard says to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay out the wages, beginning from the last ones hired until the first ones hired." And those hired about 5 o'clock coming received each one $40. And when the first ones hired coming contemplated that they will receive more, and they received, even they, the $40 each. And while picking up their pay, they kept on grumbling against the head of the house and landowner, saying, "These last ones hired produced 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have carried the burden of the day and the sweltering hot sun." And answering to one of them, he said, "Friend, I am not unjust to you. Wasn't there a mutual agreement with me of $40? Take what's coming to you and scram. I wish to give this to the last ones hired as also to you. Is it not permitted to me to make what I wish in that which is mine? Or is your eye evil because I am good?" That would be a more literal generation, a translation. More colloquially, I would phrase that, "Or is your nose out of joint because I am generous?" That's parable. Okay. As we think about this, a couple general questions to keep in mind. First of all, does this parable genuinely accent the householder's graciousness or generosity, or does it highlight something else? Is this parable about justice and injustice? In other words, has the householder, the master of the vineyard, the landowner in this parable, acted unjustly? Third question. Why does this parable deliberately antagonize the hearer? Right? Because again, I think if you read this parable, you shouldn't be happy with the outcome. You should be a little upset. So why does Jesus want to tell parables that always upset us? What's the matter with him? Okay, keep kind of those three questions in mind. To put the parable into its context, and that is looking at Matthew chapter 19, as well as here now in verse 20. And the whole understanding here is within chapters 19 and 20, there is a kind of understanding about judgment and how one is going to be rewarded or not rewarded in the judgment. And there are various instances about that. Chapter 19, verses 3 to 12, it's a test, if you will, between Jesus and the Pharisees. And they align themselves with Moses, but more significantly, they align themselves with a legalistic understanding of how God has been at work among them. And thus, Matthew would say, they fail the test. The second test is in verses 13 to 15 of chapter 19. And that's where Jesus tells us that it is the least, it is the little ones who make it into the kingdom of heaven, into God's reign and rule. Then we have the story of the rich young man in verses 16 to 22, who asks, you know, what good deed must I do for eternal life? And Jesus' response is, it's not only following the commandments and loving the neighbor, but abandoning all possessions and following Jesus. And of course, we know that the rich young man doesn't do so well on that test either. And then there are further sayings about the difficulties of the rich. And Peter says, but you know, we've given up everything to follow you, and so on and so forth. So certainly something must be coming our way. And so then in that kind of context, Jesus now tells this parable. And again, of course, it's this notion of working, labor, wages that comes from labor. Are we talking about reward and so on and so forth, or what? So, into the parable itself. Verse 1, right, as we start with this, that we have this landowner who goes out and he needs to hire people for his vineyard. Now again, within our context and understanding, it's no accident that we're talking about a vineyard, because vineyards are very important in the history of Israel and their tradition. Why, of any kind of field Jesus could have picked, would Jesus pick a vineyard? Biblical scholars.
Isaiah,
very good. Where in Isaiah, do you remember? Isaiah's Song of the Vineyard, Isaiah chapter 5, verses 1 to 7, is one of the key passages. And it compares Israel, of course, to a vineyard. Israel, God's people, are God's vineyard. And so when we think about this parable, we also have to think about what it means to be in the vineyard. And so if someone, please, would turn to Isaiah 5, verses 1 to 7, and just read that for us, so we once again have that understanding of what vineyard means. And anyone, please, can read that.
Let me sing for my beloved, my love song concerning his vineyard. My beloved had a vineyard on a very fertile hill. He dug it and cleared it of stones and planted it with choice vines. He built a watchtower in the midst of it and hewed out a wine vat in it. And he looked for it to yield grapes, but it yielded wild grapes. And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge between me and my vineyard. What more was there to do for my vineyard that I have not done in it? When I looked for it to yield wild grapes, why did it yield wild grapes? And I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will remove its hedge, and it shall be devoured. I will break down its wall, and it shall be trampled down. I will make it a waste that shall not be pruned or hoed, and briars and thorns shall grow up. I will also command the clouds, that they rain no rain upon it. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah are his pleasant planting. And God looked for justice, but behold, bloodshed. For righteousness, but behold, an outcry.
Good. Thank you. So, okay, we know the vineyard in this is like Israel. It's the people of God. And the grapes are what? Yep. But in general, the grapes are to symbolize what? The fruits, the life of that, that specifically there, it used phrase like justice, righteousness. And instead of good grapes, we got wild grapes, or another way of translating that, kind of what I write, sour grapes. Because that's what wild grapes often write. They're sour grapes, and we all know how much fun it is to eat sour grapes, or have sour grapes. And then, of course, here, this is a notion of injustice or unjustice, unrighteousness, so on and so forth. So again, we've got a vineyard here, and somebody needs to go out into the vineyard. If you will, someone needs to go out, as we'll see in a little bit, into the people of God, or out into the people. And therefore, you need laborers. Right, and so that's the sense. We've got now laborers going out into the vineyard, going out to work. The other thing, just in terms of speculation, you need laborers in a vineyard for three reasons. There's a time for planting, a time for pruning, and a time for harvesting. What time is it, do you think, in this parable for hiring laborers? Is this landowner, is he concerned about planting, pruning, harvesting?
Harvesting.
Harvesting, wow. Why did so many of you right away chime in with harvesting? Yes?
Why he hired so many laborers,
that
he needed the grapes off the vine quickly.
Okay.
It was the heat of the hot summer sun, so that's the harvest.
Okay, summer sun seems to talk about harvest. Yes.
I think I assume that because it seems to be a parable about people who come to the faith at the end of their life and they have the same reward as those who have been in the fold the whole time, so it's the kind of ending, and it's harvesting seems to have kind of a death involved with that.
Okay, so we're working there to say one way of understanding the metaphor and symbolism of the story, the end of things, right, when things come to ripeness, maturity, fruition, harvesting seems to fit better than anything else. Anybody else?
Does it really matter?
Huh?
Does it matter?
Sure.
I just never pictured them harvesting. I pictured them nurturing it along somehow.
Okay, so you see them more in kind of the pruning mode.
Yeah, I've never pictured it as the finale. I've pictured it as keeping, tending the people, tending the vineyard.
Okay. Anyone else? Anyone who wants to opt for something other than harvesting, who likes planting or pruning better?
I help on a farm sometime, and when you're planting, that's the most important thing you can possibly do. Or when you're pruning, that's the most important thing you can possibly be doing. Harvesting doesn't happen unless those other things happen.
Okay.
I've always thought it was that middle phase as well, and included a lot of manual labor around hauling out the things that were pruned out and spreading them in order.
Okay, well, we'll just leave that an open question for the moment. Well, you don't think I'm going to give you an answer. Okay, so, but keep that in mind, too, again. Then, as we move on, okay, we're going to hire some laborers, and we get to the first ones there in verse 2, right? First thing in the morning, so that means 6 o'clock, and the interesting thing here is, right, that the vineyard owner negotiates the wage with the workers. They come to, I translated that as, a mutual agreement. And they, the wages they set on is a denarius a day, and again, I tried to translate that into a contemporary figure. It's $40 for the day if we try to put that into our wages or whatever. Again, what a denarius back then would be is the standard wage for a day laborer. We might talk about it as minimum wage. In other words, it's kind of subsistence level wages. Right? It's making enough so that you'd have the money that you need to purchase your food for the day for your family. Right? So we're not talking a great amount of wages. This is minimum wage. This is just trying to, you know, get by, standard for the day. Nothing going on there. Then again, the owner goes out. But what's the difference between those who were first hired at 6 o'clock and when he goes out again at 9 o'clock?
There's no negotiation mentioned.
No, there's no negotiation, and instead, what is said? I'll pay you what's ever fair, or again, right, the word that's there is whatever is just. And again, you know, to say fair is a fine translation of that, but you know, so whatever is just. And right, the folks go for that. Would you? You go in for a job, you know, I'm looking for people. I really need a day off, so I'm looking for people, someone who will teach this Bible study tomorrow. And so I come to you and say, would you teach a Bible class for me tomorrow? And, you know, I'll pay you what's ever just. Deal?
Well, sure, if it's 9 o'clock, I don't have a job yet, right?
So if I just say, I'll pay you whatever's just, you're okay with that. You're going to trust
what
me.
What your options are. I mean, these guys later in the day don't have that many options.
Right.
True.
And if you're hungry, you'll agree to anything.
So in other words, this guy, right, the owner could have said anything. It wouldn't make any difference because you're so desperate, you'll... If I would have said, hey, you know, I'll pay you whatever's unjust, you'd say, yeah, it's okay. I'm hungry. I'll work for...
No, there's an element of trust there.
There is.
But Michael,
yes?
What is just for you might not be just for her. Right?
Yeah. But that, right, so, but this is open-ended, right? The owner just says, whatever's just. Doesn't tell us what just is, does he? Do you know what's just?
Do they have an expectation?
Yeah, there we go. That's the whole issue, right? Do they have an expectation? Do you have an expectation?
There's a lot of trust going on.
There's some trust.
There's a lot of power going on.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
There's some trust, but there's also, like, there's not too many options that person would have at that point.
All right, so what's going on here is we've got some trust. We've got some power. Is this okay to say that there's some desperation going on? See, another day of disappointment and despair. Despite the fact that the Daily Optimist Club probably met again. Yeah. Desperation.
Incentive.
Perhaps he said, go ahead.
No, go, please go.
Perhaps he said just giving indication that he's going to watch how they work. And if they work hard, they get a higher pay, and not the other, to maybe spur them on to greater heights as far as productivity.
Okay, so that would go with incentive, right? As I hear you on that, so that whatever is just, that phrase, of course, what's significant about that is that that sets up expectations. Go ahead, Ellie, and then we'll go over here.
Just to throw something out there. I definitely never get into a cab in at the checkpoint of Bethlehem or whatever without negotiating the price first. Because if I say, oh, I need to go to Christmas Lutheran or to the school or something, I say, oh, yeah, sure, get in. I said, well, what's the price, Kadesh? Oh, whatever. But that doesn't actually mean whatever, and there is expectations there. And so I mean on the opposite side of, I don't necessarily care how desperate I am to get a ride somewhere. I'm not just gonna hop in a cab without negotiating the price first. So
you want to know what it's gonna cost you, right?
Yeah. The theme of justice also goes back to Isaiah 5.
Yes.
So you have, there's a hint there of.
Yeah, no, that's right. Right. I mean, again, that's a reason when you talk about vineyards, you for certainly those hearers, and I think for us, we need to put Isaiah 5:1-7 in the background and remember the grapes were to be justice, but sour grapes and all of that. And so the phrase whatever's just or whatever's fair, we kind of read those texts together, and we got to keep all of that in mind. And so, okay, we have this. The phrase here is going to set up expectations. Certainly, it sets up expectations in the workers, the ones who were hired. They must have some notion of what they think would be just. And of course, it sets up expectations in us as readers, and at least these are some of the expectations that we have in mind as we go on with this parable. And so then, right, the great thing is to say now, is that going to carry through or not? We go on to verse 5. Again, goes out at noon, at 3 o'clock, and it tells us the owner did the same. In other words, go out there, work, I'll pay you whatever's just. So all of these expectations are set up. One little side comment about that, going out at 6, 9, noon, 3, 5. Why the different times? Certainly within earlier Christian understandings of this parable, one of the primary ways of interpreting parables was to allegorize them. In other words, each character in the story, each thing in the story, and so on and so forth, was to represent something else, was to symbolize something else. And within the patristic period, if you will, or that period after the early church, in interpreting this parable, figures like Chrysostom and Augustine looked at these different times of day as the different chronological times in life when people are called. So that, in other words, if you're called at 6 o'clock in the morning, that symbolizes youth. And then, 9, you're a little older. Noon, middle age. 3, 5 o'clock, right? Maturity, old age, in other words, when that word of God comes to you. And so just for what that's worth, right, one way of looking and interpreting the parables. Now, verses 6 and 7. Going out at 5 o'clock, the owner finds others standing around. He says to them, you know, why are you standing around here doing nothing? What's the difference between the way the owner acts when he goes out at 5 o'clock over against the other times when he goes out?
Scolds them.
All right. Doesn't come, right. There's no promise of payment. If you read very closely in terms of verbs, what verb is attached to the owner, I think it's in verse 2, over against what verb is attached to the owner in verse 6. Boy, now we're really picky in our reading, aren't we? At 6 in the morning, the owner goes out and what?
Yeah,
he's going out to hire all the time, but what's that verb before hire?
Agree.
No, before that.
Went out.
Yeah, and?
He sent them.
Mm-hmm.
Not in our translation.
Must be in yours.
Well, isn't that something? No wonder I'm asking a question you can't answer. I ask a lot of those questions. Right? But the thing here is what we should do in that opening verses there again is that the owner comes out and saw people standing, right? Just, right? Which, you know, is such a little innocuous verb, I guess they didn't want to pay any attention to it, right? Right? Because, you know, I'm just going out and look at all those people out there. Saw. In verse 6, what verb do we have?
Found.
Finds. Do you think there's any difference between, you know, just going out and seeing some people standing around and finding some people standing around?
Finding indicates action. He was looking.
Yeah. But again, right, the purposeful kind of
exactly. Looking.
And so now ask you, so why is this owner trying to find workers at 5 o'clock in the afternoon when there's only an hour left?
There's grapes to be picked. There are grapes to be picked, and he wants to get them done.
Grapes to be picked, right? There's a sense here, right, of, I don't know, let's use this word, right? Urgency. And that's why, again, going to the perhaps that sense of harvest makes the most sense, because after all, you certainly got to plant and prune, and there's some urgency there. But as farmers or people who have orchards, vineyards, know, right? When the stuff is ripe at precisely that particular time, produce is at its best quality, all that kind of stuff, you got to get it in. You got to harvest it, then there's that urgency. Yes?
For whatever reason, there's no less need for the owner.
Right.
At 5 o'clock than there was at 6 o'clock.
Right. The need, the urgency, or the sense of need. Right. I need people to pick grapes.
I don't think the owner was very diligent if these people have been standing around all day from earlier.
Precisely. And in that sense, do you believe those guys?
What guys?
We've been standing here all day. Well, if they'd been standing there all day, wouldn't he have seen them earlier and said, go out and pick? Are these guys lying to us?
I doubt it. I've seen it a lot of Southern California. They do stand around all day.
Yeah, but you see, if they were standing around all day, and if you believe them, they said, well, we've been standing around all day, nobody's hired us. Well, this guy came out at 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 3 o'clock. I mean, he's been hiring. There's need. There's urgency there. I mean, what? I mean, you know, don't you think it's these guys, you know, they're saying, oh, there's the owner. Quick. Hide. Maybe won't see us. So in other words, that whole thing about saying, where are we here? Which verse would that be? Right? Verse 7, because no one has hired us. One, do you believe him?
Yes.
Maybe not.
He said no one has hired us. He didn't say you haven't hired us. Maybe they were in the wrong place somewhere else where there wasn't work available.
Yeah, or even if they were hiding out all day, no one has hired us.
That's true. Where do you think they were willing to work? Do you think they've been standing there since 6 a.m.?
No. Now, it's not the workers who say that they have been standing there all day.
That's right.
It's the one who is coming out to hire them who says, why have you been standing here all day idle? They don't actually technically ever say that they've been standing there all day. All they say is, no one has hired us.
Yeah. Okay.
And who knows what their attributes are? I mean, maybe the stronger, more able people would be hired first and less able people hired later because they're less able. It's like picking for the dodgeball team, you know?
Or in that time and era, maybe they had to travel further to get to a place to find work.
Okay.
And they're all dispossessed from the land. They're all,
They're all dispossessed. That's right. They, for whatever may have happened, these are just day laborers who are trying to eke out a living. But, right, so given the different reasons, given the things that go on there, right, there's this sense of finding, there's the response of the foe, we've been here all day, or you know, no one has hired us, can we believe them on that, or, you know, are there different circumstances there? Certainly one of the things that I think is expressed by the phrase, however you want to understand their credibility and circumstances, is they are people who are kind of desperate, right? They're expressing a sense of desperation, you know. We've come to the realization, you know, we kind of need money for the day too, and no one's hired us. Right? It's kind of not much hope left. And this owner says, because of need, urgency, go. Get out there. Okay. So we finally got everybody working, and it's pay time. Verses 8 and 9. And again, this owner is acting as a good follower of God's Torah would do. The law requires the payment of wages in the evening at the end of a day's work. And so that's precisely what happened. And right, the owner says to his foreman, to the person who manages the workers out in the field, to bring them in and to start paying them, but starting with the last ones until the first ones. And so, verse 9, those that were hired at 5 o'clock receive a full day's wages. They receive the $40.
And they get paid first.
Is that some Jewish tradition or something that would be that way or not?
No. I think the reason that those hired last get paid first, that's part of the way in which this story is structured, because of course by doing that, it again sets up expectations. Because they're all called in. Oh, I just erased all your expectations. But anyways, with those expectations, right, if the last receive the $40, and of course remember, all the workers are there, the last receiving the $40 again, what kind of expectations, if you're the folks that were hired at 6, 9, noon, and 3, what kind of expectations do you have?
1 hour equals $40.
1 hour equals $40. So, in other words, if you were hired at 6 that morning, how much do you think you're going to get? So right, if you go that way, right, they'd get 12 times more, that'd be $480. That's pretty good. Yes?
One question that gets raised for me here is, we're just talking about how much time they put in, but the fact that he had to keep going out and finding more workers may be because his managers sucked. But it also might be that the people that he hired early weren't doing the work. Putting in the time, but the quality of the work.
Mm-hmm. Or that we're compensating according to need and not necessarily according to the amount of labor
that we're in. Well, I might want to question that a little bit, because remember, they're all day laborers. They're, in that sense, they're all kind of in the same boat. Someone overhears it, right? They're all kind of dispossessed from the land themselves. They're all working for the kind of minimum wage, and so kind of generally speaking, you would say they all have the same need, right? They need this money to buy food for putting on the table that evening.
No, but the need of the manager, the person hiring. He needed those workers more.
I see.
He's willing to pay them more, you know, in comparison.
I see. So you're doing supply and demand here, and so since the demand for workers is still more urgent, therefore the wages go up because I need you so badly and there's so few workers around, I'm willing to pay you $40 for 1 hour. Okay.
And there could be, I see, the employer, there could also be the hope that they'd come back tomorrow because there's probably more work to be done.
Okay.
If you have a fair wage, gosh, they'd be eager to come back tomorrow.
Okay.
Well, or just at the beginning of the day, you negotiated for what the workers needed for their daily wage. That was what was going to meet their daily wage needs.
Right.
Workers who come in later don't need any less than the workers who started working at the beginning. They all need the same amount to meet their basic subsistence needs.
Okay. All right. At this level, is the owner generous?
Yes.
So you would say there, at least in paying those first workers, the ones that were hired last, they got the $40, there's an example of generosity. Okay? Then, as we know, he goes on and keeps paying all the others, and as we find out, those that started at 6 a.m., and worked all day, received $40. Now what do you think?
It's still just.
It is just. It's what they agreed on.
That happens all the time. I'll buy something sometime, or I'll sign up for, you know, Dish Network or something like that, and a month later they offer this thing where they offer this stuff free for new subscribers, and I'm left out. But I've still got the same service. I have no complaints, just, but I missed out on what I could have had.
Is the owner still exercising generosity? By so that by paying those guys that worked all day $40, you'd say, wow, what a generous guy. Okay.
It's to me, what his arrangement was in the beginning.
Okay, well, in the beginning, with those who worked at 6 o'clock, hired at 6 o'clock, our text tells us. Right, they came to a mutual agreement. You work for me today, $40.
He's just to them. But if he, as an owner, could have paid unemployed people more than that, then I might have considered him to be generous. We don't know that information, but I think the way wages are set, the way people agree in an agreement like this, doesn't tell us really whether the employer is being generous or stingy. He's just if he pays them what they agree to. But the generosity of that depends upon his initial offer, only known to him, possibly, that I think about laborers that, I'm not going to name names or anything, but certain employers who hire people and offer them a pittance, and the people are in agreement because if they need it, I would not say he was generous. If a man owns a business or a woman owns a business and makes sure that his or her salary or profit is at least comparable, if not, you know, he has a reasonable percentage, then I would say they're generous.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it gets
but we are, right, the parable very carefully lays out for us, if you will, the facts.
Yes.
Those hired at 6 mutually agreed $40 a day. Those hired at 9, 12, and 3, it was whatever's just, and we recognize that just raised expectations. And we also know that those hired at 5 simply got the $40. In fact, we know everyone got $40. And you said, for those hired at 5, the judgment we make about that is the owner shows generosity towards those folks. You also said those who were hired at 6 and got what they negotiated for, the owner is just. We're debating whether or not the owner is generous about those folks. What about this one? Those hired at 9, 12, and 3 under the rubric, whatever is just. What's your judgment on the owner's payment pay scale there? Was the owner just? Was the owner generous? How are you going to assess that?
Just.
Just.
No, generous.
Oh, there's such controversy. Some say just, some say generous. Well, of course, you know, the only way we can find the right answer on that is we have to vote. How many think the owner is just? Raise your hand. And you got to vote sometimes. I don't want cowardice here. All right.
What's your question?
Yeah.
For those who were hired at 9, 12, and 3 under the rubric, I'll pay you whatever is just. I've asked, do you think the owner is just or do you think the owner is generous in paying them $40? Just, there were about, how many say just?
I vote
for merciful. Okay. How many say generous? All right, generous wins.
And I say it doesn't matter, and we're quibbling about something in a metaphorical story.
which really, in the ultimate message of the story, is of modest import.
It doesn't matter! That sounds like something I would say. Yes?
We're quibbling about money and salary. The generous all the way through, because what does he promise? Life, for the daily life, to live.
Daily bread.
And that's a generosity.
Okay, so you see generosity just simply in terms of that. We'll go to the front and then we'll go to the back. Please.
The owner himself says it's just.
Yes.
He identifies his own action as just.
Yes.
But why does it have to be either or? Yeah, it can be just and generous.
Because we usually understand generosity as something more than simply justice, right? No? Let's go to the back. And
the just, going back to the 6 o'clock people as well, you described this as the minimum wage. And at least, even though the workers agreed to it, it may not still be just.
Yeah, it's true.
It's systemically, in this economic system, I don't think it's justice when people get paid minimum wage.
I agree.
So in the 9, 12, and 3, where you gave us a choice of just and generous, I want a third choice.
And that would be?
That it isn't just.
Okay. So, that's my abbreviation for the owner is really a money grubbing capitalist pig. Exploiting the workers. Solidarity forever, right? Okay.
You know, legally not make the point, you know, from a legal point of view, they were under duress when they made the contract, and now they're seeing that the underlying assumptions of that contract are no longer, proven to be true. And so they're questioning that contract.
Now they're questioning the contract.
But there was nothing signed, so it's not legal.
No, they didn't, right? I mean, your word is good, right? And in that sense, at least however we want to analyze this guy, right? He keeps his word. He said at least $40 a day, they got $40 a day. Whether, whether those are exploitative, fair, just wages, that's, again, all parts of how we might want to interpret it and put it into the story.
Look under the way, and then we'll go back there. One thing we're forgetting is that there's a certain satisfaction in working all day long,
yes,
that you don't have standing around, boy, you're being bored. And so that fits into this thing, too.
All right. Okay. Although, at least the response of those who worked all day didn't think it was all so great, given the fact that they had to bear the heat of the sweltering sun, right? It was kind of tough. Yes?
I want to put a disclaimer in here. I'm an attorney. So I always like to define my terms.
Okay.
And clearly we have a worker who's saying, this is not justice. This does not meet my idea of justice. My idea of justice is we're going to be rewarded according to the amount of work and effort that we put in. But the owner is saying, I have been just. I said that I would reward you in terms of, in a just way, and I have. So I think the idea is, what is the owner see as justice? Because clearly it's something different. It's not this sort of hierarchical, according to the effort that we have put in, idea of justice that both the workers and the apostles earlier are talking about.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. Part of what's going on here is we kind of have here a hierarchy, a pyramid of expectations that kind of, if you're hired at 6, you should be getting at the top. If you're hired at 9, if you're hired at 3, if you're hired at noon, 3, 5, right? We kind of have this hierarchy of values, expectations, whatever. So again, figuring if these guys got 40, we ought to get 480, kind of working our way up that way. And again, of course, the parable is shattering those expectations. In terms of specificity, what is the complaint? Take a look there at, where are we? Verse 12. Very specifically, what is the complaint that is brought forward?
You've made them equal to us.
Right. So are these folks, let's just say this company, you know, from those who worked all, are they complaining that the folks who got $40 for working an hour got $40 for working an hour? No, they don't. They could care less about that. What does that mean? You have made them equal to us. How do you understand that phrase?
You haven't valued. We're more important.
Right. You haven't again, we're back to a hierarchy, and it's a hierarchy of value. Right? Here, put in terms of wages, reward, and whatnot, is you haven't valued us the same way.
Sounds like the prodigal son in a different wrapping.
It can be that elder brother and the prodigal son, that's that notion of value. Yet
it sounds to me like the people who were against immigration. You've made them equal to us.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm not kidding.
No, I understand that within our context issue is a significant one, yes.
And more generally, not necessarily towards the complaining workers, the difference between legal and just.
Uh-huh. Right.
What the prevalent law is.
Right, we can again make those distinctions between legal and just and all of that. And again, the interesting thing is the complaint is raised, and then note the owner's response. He says to that person, first and foremost, friend. And if you were at Matins this morning, you know that there is a many-colored understanding of what is friend.
Except in Matthew, there's only three times.
Yes.
And this time, and when the guy shows up without a wedding garment, and right. Judas shows up.
Right.
Ooh.
Yeah. So again, friend is used in a very unique way in Matthew. And again, the owner's final word to this friend is scram. Right? Go! The point, and again, as usual, we're running out of time here, is I think where we make a wrong turn in interpreting this parable about grace is that we think, oh yes, this owner, of course, is generous, is gracious to all of to those hired last. There's some grace. And so therefore, if we think, well, you know, then that must mean that the whole thing here, that somehow getting your reward, your wages, is gracious. Right, and so we have to try to make grace fit, if you will, into a reward system. But that's really problematic, because if it's a notion of reward, even based on generosity, we're not talking about grace at all. The grace in this parable is not in terms of the wages that are paid out to anyone. Where's the grace in this parable?
That they got a job.
That everybody's valued.
It's given, not earned.
He valued them.
Everyone is invited. And you see, the complaint there is you've made them equal. Yes! And that's what should be so upsetting about grace, right? Whether you were there at 6 in the morning or 5 in the afternoon, you're invited. And you see, it didn't make any difference who you are in that sense. All are invited, right? God's gracious invitation is extended to all of us. And it can come at different times, in different situations. It can be because of our being different people. All of those conditions that we would like to place upon invitation are shattered. The graciousness is in the invitation. The graciousness is in the call. And of course, Matthew's gospel is a gospel that accentuates the call. Remember, at least there, what we attribute to Matthew, the call of Matthew in his gospel is, here he is, happy little tax collector, sitting in his tax collection booth, and Jesus walks by one day and just simply says, follow me. Just like coming by into the marketplace and saying, hey, folks, I need some grape pickers. Get out there. Right? That's where the grace is, in the invitation. To contrast this parable to a Jewish Midrash, this is written in the second century of the Common Era, and it's like this. I think you'll see the parallels, but also the distinction. This is a parable or a Midrash told by Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana. The matter is like a king who hired laborers and brought them into his garden. He hid and did not reveal what was the reward for working in the garden, so that they might not neglect that part of the work for which the reward was small and go out and do that part for which the reward was great. In the evening, he summoned them all and said, "Under which tree did you work?" The first answered, "Under this one." The king said, "That is a pepper tree. Its reward is one gold piece." He said to the next, "Under which tree did you work?" He said, "Under that one." The king said, "It is a white flower tree. Its reward is half a gold piece." He asked a third, "Under which tree did you work?" He said, "Under this one." The king replied, "That is an olive tree. Its reward is 200 tzitzim." The laborer said to him, "Ought you not to have told us the tree under which the reward is the greatest?" The king replied, "If I had done that, how could all of my garden have been tilled?" In this parable, the king pays different wages for different work. The parable by Jesus subverts and relativizes any scale of justice and value. When we identify with the complaint of the first hired, we opt for a world in which justice and value is defined by a hierarchical relation between individuals. Right? Indeed, to treat all the same is not just. The householder makes all equal in that all have been recipients of the same call. Value or worth in Christ's vineyard is not determined by what is right, but by the response to the call. Accepting one's acceptance to go work in the vineyard. And so indeed, again, the grace is there in the invitation. Right. We have all been welcomed by God and sent to work in God's vineyard. So thank you. And go in peace.